Well, that's fun, isn't it? The Lord certainly smiled on us, giving us a beautiful day. I think it's the prettiest day this year, don't you? Incredibly beautiful day today, and we look forward to extending that and sharing a meal together. If you like the singing, do you like the singing? Yeah. Well, if you like it, I just happened to notice that we have some new copies out in the foyer of our last recording of our congregational singing. So on the back wall back there, they're complimentary copies. So if you'd like to hear some more of this good singing, then feel free to take one of those, and you'll get to enjoy that even further. Thank you, Sonny. Always, a great job. We're studying on Wednesday night in our auditorium class here. Todd Watrous is teaching a class on the book of Acts, doing a great job. And the book of Acts chronicles about the first 30 years of the church's existence. And this past Wednesday evening, and you never quite know, this is a warning to you. By the way, this looks like a crime scene up here, doesn't it? You never quite know where I'm going to pick up sermon material, but it was stressed in our class this past Wednesday, the reaction that the disciples had to being arrested and beaten. It says the apostles left the Sanhedrin rejoicing because they had been counted worthy of suffering disgrace for his name. Acts chapter 5, verse 41. And I think it's safe to say that that's not a normal reaction to suffering, right? As we continue, however, in the book of Acts, we find that it was, in fact, a consistent attitude in the followers of Jesus. And we continue reading into the New Testament, the epistles, and we find out that this did, in fact, become the norm as Christians faced additional persecution, not only from the religious leaders of that time, but also faced persecution from their own government. Listen to Peter's first epistle as he will sometime later encourage Christians who are facing the deadly persecution at the hands of their government, Rome. Since Christ suffered in his body, arm yourselves with that same attitude. Dear friends, do not be surprised at the painful trials you are suffering as though something strange were happening to you, but rejoice that you participate in the sufferings of Christ. If you're insulted because of the name of Christ, you're blessed. For the Spirit of glory and of God rests on you. And I see these early disciples, and I hear those words of encouragement, and I look around and look at the news today and see what's happening in our world, and I think, dear God, how did they develop that kind of attitude? That they would rejoice when their back was bleeding, when they had suffered for the cause. And I think, can I learn to do that? Turn to John chapter 21, if you would. Corey read a section of that a moment ago. And let's pick up the disciples after Jesus' resurrection. Jesus has appeared by this time to them at least twice. We have two appearances recorded, but he hasn't dealt sufficiently with Peter's problem. And Peter has a problem. John chapter 21 begins this way. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, which would be Galilee. And in this way, he showed himself. Simon Peter, Thomas, called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. That means seven of them. Simon Peter said to them, I'm going fishing. And they said to him, we're going with you also. They went out immediately, got into the boat, and that night they caught nothing. I know how they felt. Now you need to realize that fishing didn't mean the same thing to Peter that it means to us. I enjoy fishing. I do a lot more talking about it these days than I do going, but when I do go, I go for fun and relaxation. But Peter was a fisherman by trade, so when he said, I'm going fishing, that meant he was going back to what gave him security before Jesus came into his life, back to his former life. So what's the problem? Well, the problem was that Peter and the other apostles had, at this point, abandoned the life to which Jesus had called them. If you go back to Matthew chapter 4, Jesus was walking by the Sea of Galilee, and he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter, and Andrew his brother, casting a net into the sea because they were fishermen. Then he said to them, "Follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men." Immediately they left their nets and followed him. Jesus called these two to be fishers of men, and they left their nets and followed him. And that wasn't an easy decision for Peter. It never is. In fact, it's not supposed to be. Peter was being asked to leave behind everything that he had, everything that he knew, everything that gave him security, his family, his job, everything, and follow Jesus who knows where. But Peter left his fishing boat to follow Jesus, and he was serious about his commitment. He later said to Jesus in Mark 10, "We've given up everything to follow you." And they had. They had held nothing back. But you know the story. You know the story of how Peter failed when the real test came, how he slept as Jesus struggled in Gethsemane in prayer, and how he watched as the Roman soldiers and the temple guards led by Judas Iscariot came and took Jesus from them, and then he ran into the night like a coward. But he still wanted to be close to Jesus and see what was going to happen. And so he found himself standing by the fire on a cold night in the courtyard, trying to stay in the shadows and not be recognized. And when he was challenged, he denied three times that he even knew Jesus, to the point of swearing on oath. And then in the middle of all of that, that terrible sound that pierced the early gray dawn, the rooster. You've heard it, haven't you? I thought about imitating one, but I'd end up sounding like a fool. You've heard a rooster, right? It never was a very pleasant sound for me because of the time that it came. If they could learn to crow about 10 o'clock, it would have been a lot more pleasant sound. But they always crow before the sun comes up, when it's still gray and just becoming twilight. And instantly Peter remembered Jesus' words that he had said, "Before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, you'll deny me three times." And he left the palace courtyard in tears, humiliated, ashamed. He had done the very thing that he had promised he wouldn't do. And now here it was, in John 21, 15 days later. The crucifixion had taken place, followed 2 days later by the resurrection, and Peter had failed the Lord when it really mattered. And he probably didn't ever expect to see him again. And maybe a part of him hoped he wouldn't. Because how could he face him? His heart was broken. He's been crushed by his failure. There's a little-known video that's entitled Witness, in which Kurt Cloninger imagines what it would have been like to be among those people who walked with Jesus. And in that film, he portrays how Peter may have felt at this time. And I want to share with you a portion of that, what he imagines Peter saying in common vernacular. Now, keep in mind, this is not scripture, but it's just one man's guess as to how Peter might have been feeling, what might have been going through his mind, and I think it's worth our consideration. "Man, I'm confused right now. They say when the going gets tough, the tough go fishing. Well, that's where I am. I've been fishing since I was 2 years old, me and Andrew. It's the only life we ever knew. Till like 3 years ago. Peter's the name, means rock. Yeah, that's me. Okay. Steady as a rock. What a joke. More like a pebble, you know, maybe like a little speck of gravel. I followed Jesus for like 3 years. Jesus takes me into his inner circle, like one of the guys. He really let me in on some stuff. I sure don't know why he did that. I messed up so many times I quit counting. But he never gave up on me. At least, not yet. But I don't know about this time. I don't know. See, we go to Jerusalem with him thinking that this was it. You know, like his coronation or something. I mean, we were walking and talking about how good it was going to be. Jesus reigning on the throne in Jerusalem and us being like his helpers. But things sure didn't turn out like we planned. They sure didn't turn out like we thought they would. He got himself crucified. And stupid me, instead of fighting for him, I tell people I don't even know who he is. Start cussing and stuff and telling people I don't run with him. I mean, I said some stupid things in my time, but now Jesus is dead and we don't know what to do. And I'm a traitor, like a coward. Yesterday I couldn't even stand up to a little girl and tell her I was with Jesus. You ever wonder if maybe like you've crossed a line or something? Like you've done so much stuff that you can't ever be forgiven? That's me. That's where I am right now. And it ain't too good. Let me tell you, it ain't too good. Look, I got to go. Maybe the fish will take my mind off things. Maybe you've been in a similar situation. I have. In spite of your determined commitment to live for Christ and in spite of your insistence that you'll never let him down, you did. And perhaps there have been times when you couldn't imagine that Jesus would even want you back. Maybe times when you wouldn't even pray because you were too embarrassed to talk to him. Because you knew that you didn't have the right to petition him for anything. And it's not because we willfully turned our backs on him. We just let some less important things in life crowd out our commitment to him. And we got too involved in some stuff. Maybe it was recreation for ourselves or our children. Maybe it was a job. Maybe it was school. Maybe it was friends. And we don't know how to get out. There's a place in Atlanta called the Church of God Grill. And a preacher was so intrigued by the name that he phoned the place and someone answered the phone, "Hello, Church of God Grill." The preacher asked the restaurant how they'd come up with such an unusual name, and this is what he was told. "Well, we had a little church down here and we started selling chicken dinners after church on Sunday to help pay the bills. And people liked the chicken. And we did such a good business that eventually we cut back on the church service. After a while, we just closed down the church altogether and kept on serving chicken dinners. We kept the name we started with, and that's Church of God Grill." By the way, I think it said in our announcement somewhere in there that service is going to be over at 11. Don't get your hopes up. It's a little late for that. That's an extreme example, but I think that that's just how some congregations can lose our sense of calling. We can get sidetracked if we're not careful and forget what the Lord called us to do. And I know that we as individuals can certainly forget what God's called us to do and to be. And when we lose our directions, we forget what we were called to do, and we need to be, like Peter, recalled to our calling. We've been called to be fishers of men, in case we've forgotten. Followers of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. You know how God calls us back to him when we get off track? Same way he did Peter. He said, and if I be lifted up, I'll draw all men to myself. Jesus recalled Peter by forgiving him. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Feed my lambs. Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Tend my sheep. Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he had said to him a third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, follow me. Why do you suppose Jesus singled Peter out for those questions? He wasn't the only one that let him down. I think it was because, not so much because he wanted to rebuke Peter, but that Jesus set this up as an opportunity to tell Peter that he loved him, that he forgave him, and that he trusted him, even after all Peter had done. Everything that had happened in Peter's life had to remind him of his denials. I mean, here they are, on this occasion, sitting on the beach around a fire. And that fire had to remind him of a fire just a couple of weeks earlier in that courtyard. And in the early morning hours when Peter couldn't sleep and he was wishing for daylight, and there was something that he would hear, and he knew it was inevitably going to happen before the day dawned. He was going to hear another rooster crow. And he couldn't sleep. And he wanted to stop his ears at that moment so it wouldn't remind him of what he had done. And even the fish that he wanted to catch, they weren't men. You notice that Jesus didn't stop with asking Peter, do you love me? He said, do you love me more than these? And Corey taught a lesson on this not too long ago. More than what? Do you love me more than these? More than what? Well, I think that he meant, Peter, look around you. Do you love me more than these things? The boats, the nets, the fish, the camaraderie, this former way of life. Because if you do love me more than these things, what are you doing here? Let's get busy about the business to which I called you. What was Jesus' message to Peter with his responses, feed my lambs, tend my sheep, tend my lambs? What did that mean? He was saying, Peter, I still trust you. I still love you. I've forgiven you. Peter had betrayed the greatest trust that he would ever be given in his life. And Jesus is saying, I still trust you with my lambs. Jesus says to Peter, in spite of your failures, I can still use you. Jesus challenged Peter to get back to the work that he had originally called him to by saying, follow me. In John chapter 1, Jesus had originally called the disciples as they were fishing when he came along the seashore, and he said, follow me. And now he comes to the end of his life, and he's talking to Peter one last time, and he leaves him with these same words that he started with, follow me. And you see, that's because that's all that's really important in this life. Everything else is secondary. There's only one thing that's important. Following him. Our life begins and ends with that invitation. The God of the second chance, somebody has called him. And I like that. The God of the second chance is asking you this morning, do you love me? Will you give him an honest answer? And he's asking you even more than that, do you love me more than these? And you fill in the blank. your job, your family, your house, your land, your children, your recreation. You fill in the blank. Do you love me more than these? I know about all your failures, he says, and I still love you. Do you believe me? I would die for you. In fact, I did. For you. This morning, have you responded to his call initially to become a follower, to become a Christian? And if, as a Christian, you found yourself having failed him, and let other things work into your life so that you now are not on that same course, you're not really following him, oh, you give him some time. You give him some of yourself. But it's not real. It's not wholehearted. It's not with your whole heart and soul and mind and strength. Then he's saying to you, and maybe you feel like, rightfully so, that you don't deserve another chance. But he died to give you another chance. And he's asking you, do you love me more than these? While we stand and sing.